Welcome to Financially Ever After, your podcast for navigating the financial side of divorce. I'm Josefti Cruz, and I'm here with my co-host, Jade Eagles.
We're here to remind you that divorce might be the end of one chapter, but it's also really the start of a brand new journey filled with hope and growth.
Each episode will share practical tips for financial empowerment and insights to make this journey a little less daunting.
So thank you for joining us, and welcome to Financially Ever After.
What are we talking about today, Jade?
A fun topic. We're going to be talking about budgeting during and after divorce. Probably with a little asterisk saying,
like my favorite thing to talk about.
Hopefully there's going to be some tips that even if you're not going through that, yay.
Budgeting is important.
Incredibly important anyway.
It's the foundation of financial success. I mean, would you say, like I tell every client, it's like the budget is everything.
Yeah, and sometimes I think the client just wants to get to, when we're doing financial planning with the client, they just want to get to seeing, are they successful? But we need to kind of get back to those, some of those building blocks of like, well, do you even know, A, how much you're earning? Some clients don't even know how much they're earning. How much you're spending.
Right.
And then maybe how much is, you know.
Like I said, I think it's like the foundation, right? So let's think of a house.
Mm-hmm.
The budget is that foundation. And with a, if you have a crappy foundation, you're going to have a crappy house.
Yeah.
Right? So you have a strong foundation, you can build something good from there.
Ooh,
right?
Oh, I like that. Yeah, we'll try and like bring in some, I guess, construction sort of
construction analogies.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to talk about creating a divorce budget. What are essential versus discretionary expenses?
What?
Yeah, we're going to do like a little mini vocabulary lesson.
Terminology.
Yes.
Which is important. Yeah, so we're going to kind of get into that a little bit more. We're going to talk about, obviously, different tools and some strategies that you can not only be using now, but as you kind of navigate.
Permanently, I would say. It's a good habit.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
things that you can utilize permanently to help you going forward in your new life, right? And then just little tips and tricks for adjusting your spending habits through and past divorce.
Yeah.
Right? I always love to come in with these really fun stats.
You should check out Joe's favorites page here. So
yes.
This is another corker out there. So
what?
A corker.
Are you? What's that?
It's maybe a Commonwealth term.
So okay, yeah. I have no idea.
Like a ripper?
That sounds like a fart.
It does sound like a fart, but it's not.
Okay.
A good one.
Okay.
All right.
All right. From the National Library of Medicine.
One 30... of my favorites.
38% of divorcees, I guess, or people going through divorce report that financial problems are the main cause of their divorce. So what does that tell us? Why is that relevant to what we're talking about today?
Well, you know, look, that's quite a high percentage. And when I start to think about that, it makes sense to me that you can, there's always going to be pressures on this relationship. And if you add kids into it, you add all these other things, having that financial stress means that maybe you can't really be achieving some of those, you know, travel that you want to do or spending and stuff like that. So I think that can naturally just have put strain on that relationship there.
And if you have financial problems during your marriage, putting a stop to that and not bringing it with you into your new single
life. As you
life,
transition, yeah, to single
your single
foot.
Life is going to be your better life,
yeah.
Hopefully, right? So let's not bring those problems with us.
And I think if we can install, or if you can install for yourself, good budgeting and good spending techniques.
I just came up with one. Good financial hygiene.
Ooh, that does not sound construction at all, but
well,
okay.
I'm coming up with different terms that might stick with people. Who knows?
I'll roll with it.
Okay, financial hygiene.
But yeah, like it's... Getting back to your foundation there, it's setting in that good foundation for you. If you don't have it beforehand, there's no reason why you can't at least start learning to have those good disciplines and good financial hygiene.
Going forward.
Yeah. That's why, at least for me, it's important. What about yourself, though?
Yeah, super important.
Yeah.
And it's one of those habits, you know, you have to form the habit and you have to really be conscious of sticking with it. Kind of like working out for me. It's a conscious decision. Like I have to stick with it and I have to do it. It's good for me.
Yep.
Sometimes it's annoying, but I'm going to do it because it's good for me.
Which phase are you at the moment there?
It's not good for me right now. Okay. But anyway, right, yes, okay. Yes. All right. Back to our vocabulary lesson.
Oh, is this a quiz or do I?
Well, let's talk about it first and so I might quiz you later.
You mentioned essential versus discretionary beforehand. Yeah.
Yes.
So when I think of essential
expenses,
mm-hmm. thank you. These are, other than using the actual word for it, essential, but these are like must have, like critical to my life. So whether that be a mortgage payment, my rent.
A rent. Mm-hmm.
Phone. Yeah. You know, these are things that, you know, utility bills, gas, water, electric, you know.
Food, eating.
Gas in the car. Yeah. Food. Yeah.
But I guess essential. I feel like while you mentioned that list, though, those different things, like each of those, I feel like have shades of gray that could become discretionary. For example, the phone, I think that's become an essential thing. But do I need the newest $1,500 iPhone
or
not?
Or I guess if you...
Or is that more discretionary?
Yeah. Or even different plan levels. You know, there's all these different plans. You know, right. There are some cheaper plans maybe with less bells and whistles.
Right.
I think the plan that I have gives me free Netflix or something like that. You know,
that
has have
freebies.
Freebies, well, you know, because you're paying for it. But
there's different also... Oh, God, I'm, like, blanking out. Not T-Mobile, but, like, if you don't go with the – there's the cheaper providers, too.
Oh, like a subsidiary or someone who – like, another, like, you know, it could be Joe's Rentals, but you're using one of the major providers, like, right. networks and stuff like
right.
that. Yeah.
Right.
You know, that's a good point. You know,
a car, having a mode of transportation.
Yeah.
Potentially, right? Depending on where you live, a car could be a necessity, right?
We're both here in LA, so –
And don't live near a train.
Yep.
And I guess we could take a bus, but
we do have those kids who they've got sports, so we've got to drive there. So, like, if you maybe had an ideal situation in LA, maybe you didn't need a car. Maybe you could just take public transport.
When I lived in New York City, I took the subway and the bus.
Well, they even have those cars that you can just kind of just rent for the day as well.
By the hour. You can rent by the hour. Okay. But again, it's funny, within the essential expenses, like a car, let's say you've decided a car is an essential expense. Is the car that you have essential? Yeah. Or could you potentially trade down mm-hmm. for a less expensive car?
Yeah, I think I mentioned to you, like I caught up with a friend on Friday and, you know, he'd got rid of his other car and then all of a sudden he was saying that he's got this new car and it was north of $1,000 on a monthly basis that he was paying for it, albeit there was some sort of tax purpose for it, but that was still a cost to him,
right?
Which is a lot. And I think, I don't know what the average car payment is for someone. And obviously we've got higher interest rates at the moment for car lending.
Right.
And it doesn't have to be a permanent thing. Like, but can you tighten your bootstraps or whatever it is?
For the moment,
downsize your cars. You know, if you've got an additional car, can you sell one of those cars? Could you even potentially lease one of those cars out on one of those?
Toro or something.
Yeah, Toro.
I mean, I had a girlfriend that was going through divorce a few years ago, and I was, you know, I didn't realize, but she had a really nice car, and then she mentioned that the car payment was $1,500 a month. That is rent in some states and cities, right? So she did eventually decide to sell the car because that just wasn't going to be a feasible payment going forward in addition to all her other life expenses, right? So discretionary, so going to more obvious discretionary things, I think. Eating out is my main discretionary vice.
Yep.
I would say that I love.
I think that's an accurate description there.
Here's another controversial one. Coffee. Is it discretionary or is it essential, Jade?
For me, it is essential. The only time I'm not having a coffee is when I'm racing through the wilderness and then I might be without a coffee for 5 to 10 days.
Right.
But every day I'm thinking about that coffee and it's one of the
twice
top
a day.
Things that I want to do when I finish the race. But yeah, coffee for me is essential, but I've made adjustments in what I would normally do. I come from Australia. I think there's only one Starbucks in Sydney, so they just couldn't get up and running. But it's amazing when you look at how much people would spend for something that is just – a nice to have in a way.
Well, I used to walk with a coworker every day when I was in an office. We would walk to Starbucks twice a day.
It's like the modern smoke break then.
Kind maybe. Of, yes, it's like, yes.
Instead of going out for a smoke, let's just go down for a coffee.
And that was a couple years ago, so maybe it was $5 a coffee, so $10 a day. But, you know, we had a dinner party the other night, and a guest said that her coffee house raised prices so that her latte was $8. $8! Oh, my God. So let's talk about how your coffee machine or a coffee machine could bring that cost down.
Yeah. So, you know, let's say it's average price for one of those coffees from Starbucks or, sorry, any of those sort of places, $7, $8 at least there. Okay. Yes. So, and maybe a slice of that lemon pound cake on the side there. So you're up around $10. But like pulling that out, we're back to the coffee, $7, $8. You know, I know for myself, so I have a little semi-professional machine there. So there was a bigger upfront cost for that, you know, in X amount of hundreds of dollars. It was under 1,000. Instead of going to your favorite coffee house and stuff like that, you could get – I used to actually have an espresso coffee machine in the office. So there was an upfront cost of $100 on sale. And then you could buy those sleeves of the pods, around 70 cents each. So 70 cents per pod, per shot. Per shot. So I think I was having two of them. So I'm at $1.50, you know, a bit of milk. Generic
almond milk,
so maybe another 25 to 50 cents. So I'm in at $2. Chuck in, if you even like that bowling ball sort of
the almond milk that is shaped like a bowling ball
still
or a bowling pin.
Probably still around $2.
Yeah.
And you can still just go out for a walk with your coworker, whether it be at work or even just at home there. So
that's true. I forgot you did end up bringing that coffee machine to the office.
Yeah. I did.
Yeah. So that's a way to bring your...
And it did catch
your...
on, actually. Remember, one of our co-workers, Chad, actually went ahead and bought a coffee machine too.
Oh, he did. He did. Yeah. Yeah. Or he got it as a holiday present.
Yeah, that's right.
But, I mean, that could be a technique, an example of a technique to bring your discretionary expense over to the essential side because you've cut.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I'm still getting what I want. I've just reduced that cost so that now it can move over to the essentials.
Yes. So instead of $6 to $8, it's $2.
Yeah.
This might seem obvious, but it's worth saying that spend what you make and no more. Okay. So
it does seem very obvious, but
it's not always obvious. Not always obvious. So what do you make per month? What do you bring home? What hits your bank account? Mm-hmm. And that's where your budget starts. If you only bring in $1,000 a month, that's all you can spend. And that's the sandbox that you're going to play in.
Yeah. I think what people can find a little bit tricky or that adds to that is, you know, a number of people have like a number of credit cards as well, you know, because the credit card companies wanted to get your business there. You know, so there's a lot of these incentives. As a result of that, that can kind of create this fake money, extra fake money that you can tap into. And obviously, that you could probably spend, we could spend a couple of episodes just on trying to, you know, reduce your outstanding costs and stuff like that on that. But, you know, that can be something that you have to navigate there too. But that's a really good point. Like having it all written down there in front of you, like looking at what you're spending there. I know, you know, credit card statements can somewhat categorize things on how you're spending, but, you know, actually-
It's a little more opaque, right? If you use a credit card sometimes. So what are things that we can do? Like a worksheet, right? So for my clients, I always have clients start with just like a good old-fashioned worksheet that you could probably Google online. Mm-hmm. So a budget worksheet has very specific categories on it, like groceries and clothes and utilities and housing payment, gas, car, stuff like that. And just writing down what you think you spend per month in each category. A lot of people then really like apps. So I know Mint, up until very recently, was a very popular one.
Yeah, I think you've got another 10 days or so of that left there.
So I did do some quick research on maybe Mint substitutes. I have not tried them, but, you know, it seems like these get some good reviews from most expensive to least. There's something called YNAB, but maybe it's not called YNAB. Maybe it's YNAB. There is Quicken, Simplify, and Empower. So the way these apps work and why I like my clients to switch to an app, we have our own that we use with clients. But if you're doing this on your own, I like them to start with pen and paper to come up with some number and then do these apps. And what you do is you what do you call it? Aggregate?
Yep.
You
you use like all the apps, and whether it be financial planning software, it has an aggregator so it can kind of link and pull in your various accounts, whether it be investments or just your banking and credit card
your
accounts.
Bank, credit card, investment accounts. So it tracks all the ins and outs, so incomes and outflows and expenses, and it'll try to categorize the ones that it thinks are your expenses. You need to kind of help it along and manually categorize what to do, but it will tell you in black and white what you spend, and a lot of times it's really different than what you put on your budget worksheet.
And that's why you get them to start off with writing it out for a start there, because it's what they think.
Yeah, versus reality.
And then they get a slap across the face going...
Sometimes.
Yeah, like, sometimes, oh my God, oh, yeah. I'm underspending or overspending in that area there.
So I think maybe, I guess what I'm trying to say with budgeting, it's like... Maybe don't start with cutting just yet unless there's something obvious. Come up with what you think the budget is, what it actually is, what you're actually spending. And from there, you can see, oh, shoot, I'm going this much over per month, over what I make per month. This is what I have to cut back on. And then start cutting. Start figuring out what am I going to reallocate, right?
Yep. I think one thing that you also mentioned that you like to suggest to clients is even just getting simple envelope, pulling out the actual cash for that activity, whether it be eating out or restaurants or groceries, entertaining.
Yeah.
And then just once that money's out,
that's
out.
That's it. So for some of my clients that have trouble sticking to their budget for a specific category, let's say they've tried it for 2 months and they keep going over and they use credit cards most of the time. Mm-hmm. So let's say they said, I really only want to spend $500 on groceries, but I keep going over because, and then I keep getting my produce and it rots and stuff. So I just have them withdraw $500 for the month. That's what they're going to spend at the grocery so that they're more careful with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So these are.
And does that, do you find that normally works well, or they maybe stumble initially and then?
I think budgeting is always this delicate dance that always needs revising. Yeah. It's never going to be perfect and it's always a process, and that's okay.
Yeah.
Right? I don't know. I think it's a constant process.
Well, I think you're having to reteach yourself as well. So I think that's why it's a process, because you're getting ingrained in certain habits and it takes effort.
This old dog took a while for me. Right. Yeah. So new tricks.
Yeah.
Yes. But it's worth doing, and it gives you, I think, more freedom and peace of mind, right? It's knowing that you can live within your means. Mm-hmm. It's hard. It's a hard adjustment. But again, it's just a process, and it gets better over time.
Yeah. And hopefully it's more of hopefully it's going to be more of a short term sort of reduction that you're having to make there, because, you know, and we'll talk about it later on with other episodes there, but, you know, it's a temporary step that you might have to take there before you can either, you know, have the freedom and flexibility to start increasing your spending again.
Right. Perhaps, you know, after getting a new job or you know, finding a cheaper place to live, frees up the budget for other things.
Yeah.
Divorce, this or that.
Do you want to go first? Or
yeah, because I've been waiting. I've been waiting for days to tell this one to you. It's a tough one.
Speaking tough for me or tough?
For you. Speaking of coffee, which would you rather divorce? Coffee or
I don't know.
Sleeping at night before 10:30 p.m. So if you choose coffee, if you choose to keep coffee, you have to stay up late every night for the rest of your life. Or if you prefer to sleep early, like at 8:30 or whatever, like before the toddlers.
I don't know what you're even talking about there.
Then you can't have coffee anymore. So which one?
Do I have to be in the same time zone for the 10:30 or not?
Yes.
That's a tough one. I feel like coffee would rule.
So you would just stay up and pout and like...
Well, am I allowed to pout
what
still?
What time do you usually go to bed, Jane?
Look.
What time?
9:30?
No.
I
don't think
so.
No, I think you're a liar. Don't be a liar. Was that the cause of your divorce? Don't be a liar.
Between 9 and 9:30.
Or 8:30. Okay, great. Anyway. So wait, right. Which do you choose? Which are you divorcing?
I'm picking coffee.
So you're choosing
to... to keep coffee.
Keep coffee. Yeah, keep coffee and divorce your early bedtime.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, it's funny that you said coffee, because I've got coffee in one of yours.
Okay.
So a morning coffee or sleeping in, Joe?
Oh, I'd get rid of coffee in a second. I can just have tea and I would
sleep in. I didn't even have to explain. In. What?
No, I would sleep in.
Oh. That was too quick of a response. In, I thought it was going to be hard for you.
Oh, no. No, no. I'm happy to sleep in and have black tea.
Okay, then. Right. Well, I thought I had a doozy there, but obviously I did not.
So. Sorry. I do like coffee. I do like coffee, but we are at the end of this episode.
Yeah.
What did we touch on?
We touched on the importance and the actual creation of a budget, you know, breaking that budget down into things called essentials and also discretionary spending. We also spoke about, you know, some budgeting tools and techniques as well as down to some apps.
Worksheets and apps.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Putting cash in an envelope there.
Stuff like that.
As well as, you know, some tips for adjusting that spending habits, you know.
Going forward.
Yeah, going forward there.
Yeah. From Starbucks to home coffee, as an example. A lot of coffee talk today. Coffee talk.
Well, thank you for joining us. I think I definitely had a lot of fun.
I hope we made budgeting a little bit more fun for you. This is Joseph D and Jade.
And thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Jade and Joe are advisors of the Wealth Garden FS, an SEC registered investment advisor. The information is general and educational in nature and should not be considered financial, tax, or legal advice. It is not intended to serve as a substitute for personalized advice or as a recommendation or solicitation of any particular security, strategy, or investment product. Please consult with a qualified professional about your individual situation.
Advisory services are only offered to clients or prospective clients where the Wealth Garden Financial Services and its representatives are properly licensed or exempt from licensure. No advice may be rendered by the Wealth Garden Financial Services unless a client service agreement is in place.